are well over 1 billion English speakers in the world today. It is the most widely understood language in the world, and as a result, it is often considered an international language. This language, successful in spreading its influences, is relatively young. It only came into existence in the 5th century, and yet it has undergone a lot of changes. Old English, spoken first by the Anglo-Saxons, is quite incomprehensible to most of us today. Even early modern English, such as that spoken in Shakespeare's day, is noticeably different from the English we speak today.
There is a lady in the city here whom I affect. But she is nice and coy and naught esteems my aged eloquence, for long ago I have forgotten.
Besides sound, meaning and structural changes between English then and English now, vocabulary is another factor contributing to English change. In this iPod presentation, Craig Allen and I, Chengwen Huang, students from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, will explore some of the ways in which word meaning has changed over the years and how new words enter the English language. Craig, there's a lady in Verona whom I affect. I understand the speaker to mean there's a lady in Verona whom the speaker is fond of or has affection for. Now, we no longer use the word affect in this manner. We normally use it in the context of to have influence upon, like the rain did not affect my day. Why do certain words change meaning over time?
Well, meaning change in words is a very flexible process, first of all. However, there are a few recognizable paths or processes that words can take. Extension is one, or widening, as it's also called. That would be one process in which a word might go through during a meaning change. Extension is a process in which a word formerly used to refer to a specific concept changes to refer to a broader concept. An example, the word maverick. Maverick was a term used on the ranch. It referred to an unbranded cow. But it's changed meaning to mean a person, any person who doesn't conform to certain conventions of a group.
So where does the word maverick actually come from?
The word comes from the last name of Samuel Augustus Maverick. He was a Texan attorney who lived in the 1800s. Around 1845, a herd of cattle was given to Samuel Maverick as a payment of a debt owed to him. The cattle were allowed to graze unbranded. These unbranded calves became known as mavericks. By the 20th century, the term came to mean a politician who takes a stand on an issue contrary to his party's position or who runs as an independent. In current usage, maverick is anyone who stands apart from their group.
So if a word can undergo widening, I presume it can also undergo narrowing as well?
Absolutely. In contrast, narrowing is where a word formerly used to refer to a broad category has been reapplied to refer to a narrow category. The word broadcast is an example of this. The word originally was used to mean to cast seeds out. An example of how this was used can be shown by quoting James Montgomery from the Poet's Portfolio in 1836. "So in the morn thy seed broadcasted o'er the land." Today, the meaning of broadcast has changed to mean the transmitting of a signal, such as an audio or a video signal. Deer is another example of narrowing. Deer used to refer to any animal. Today, it refers to just one type of animal.
Can you tell us what happens in the process of amelioration and perduration?
Amelioration is a process in which a word's meaning changes from having a negative connotation to having a positive one. Pejoration would be the reverse of amelioration. An example of amelioration would be the word mischievous. Mischievous used to mean disastrous, so it had a negative sense. Today it means playfully annoying. Now, the word notorious, on the other hand, has undergone the process of pejoration, in which the word has changed from a positive connotation to a negative one. It used to mean widely known by everyone, but today it has a negative connotation of being unfavorably known.
So a word's meaning can be stretched to encompass more meaning, and it can also be narrowed down, and it can also undergo positive and negative changes. But in all these phenomena, the words already exist, and the change is a result of time. Could you perhaps tell us then, how does new words come into the vocabulary?
Yes, first let me say, Chengwen, say that almost all new words are created out of pre-existing words. Very few words are actually created on their own. Kodak, the word nylon, these are two words I can think of that have been created on their own, and they were created by companies, not ordinary speakers. But new words created in this way are rare.
Where does a word come from then?
One of the most common ways to create new words is through derivation. Derivation is a process by which new words are formed from existing words. Usually you just add a suffix to that word. The newly created word is often of a different word class than the original word. Take the word joy, a noun, and add the suffix full, and you have a new word, joyful, which is an adjective. Another example of derivation would be amazement, created by taking the word amaze and adding the suffix ment. Another example would be adding the suffix er to the word teach, and you would end up with the word teacher. Another way in which new words come into a language is by mistake. If a learner mislearns the meaning of a word, and that word catches on with others, then it may become a new word in the language. Words mislearned in this way are known as folk etymologies. For example, the word buttonhole is a folk etymology. Buttonhole, which was actually buttonholed, not buttonhole. The word buttonholed was originally used to mean a loop of string that held a button down. But we called it buttonhole, and we're still using it today. So there's a new word created by mistake from misunderstanding the original word.
Oh, so originally it was a buttonholed, as to hold the button. And then we just changed it to buttonhole, as in a hole.
Exactly.
Oh, how interesting. Then obviously the most common is borrowing words.
I think you're right. We have borrowed different periods in the English, in our history. We borrow thousands of words from French and actually from all the invaders that attacked England. We borrowed words from the Vikings. But today, even today, we borrow words from other cultures. From French, we borrow the word clergy, military. From Chinese, we have the word chop suey. We have from Sanskrit the word yoga and karma. From Japan, we have the word tsunami, just for example. Another very common process in which words are formed would be through the process of back formation. In back formation, a word is created by removing an affix from an already existing word. An example would be the word juggle, which is derived from the word juggler. The word juggler is a word that was adapted into English, Middle English, from the French word joggler, which means to jest. Now, it was assumed that the word juggler had an er suffix attached to it, which it really didn't. The er is just part of the word. In any case, it was assumed that this supposed er suffix could be removed and the meaning of what remained from this word could be a new word, the word juggle. Other examples of words that have been created through back formation are enthuse from enthusiasm and automate from automation.
This process sounds very similar to conversion.
Well, maybe in some ways, but there is a difference. Back formation is a process in which new words are created by removing an affix from an already existing word. This is different from conversion, which rather than chopping off the suffixes to create a new word, is a process which the whole word goes through a change. The change the word goes through is a change of word class, say changing from an adjective to a noun or changing from a noun to a verb. For example, the word download, the noun download, which is a computer term, through the process of conversion, a brand new word was created, and that was the word download, the verb. For example, I downloaded the Microsoft software yesterday.
Today we often come across words such as like guesstimate and edutainment. Now where do these words and how are they formed?
Yes, many of these words nowadays are created through the combining of processes. Words created this way are known as blends. And blends are created by combining processes together. So the word guesstimate and edutainment, the processes of clipping and compounding would be combined together.
Clipping is when you chop off a word, is that it?
Or part of a word, yes.
Part of mm-hmm. a word. Okay.
And compounding is just taking two words and putting them together. So guesstimate, you have guess and estimate, and you chop off the S on guess, and ES for estimate, put them together, you have guesstimate.
What is that supposed to mean, guesstimate?
Good question. An estimate guess, I would imagine.
It's very 21st century to do, isn't it? To just blend two things together.
It really is. And your other word, edutainment, is the same thing. It's entertainment that's, that educates it.
And frappuccino also.
Frappuccino. Another blend would be Oxbridge, combining two cities in England, Oxford and Cambridge.
Not only has words changed meaning over time, but pronunciation has also affected English change. Professor Anya Varner, Associate Professor in the Department of English at the University of Wisconsin, joins us today to talk more on the word checkmate and about pronunciation changes in general. Professor Varner, how did this word come about?
The word checkmate is very interesting because many people might think it's just a combination of check and mate, mate as in friend and associate, which is a word of Germanic origin. But that's not the origin of the word checkmate at all. It's related to the word chess. So let me talk about chess a bit at first. Chess itself first occurs in Middle English, and it's used by Chaucer. And as many words at the time, it was borrowed into English from Old French. But variations of the word exist in many languages, among them Persian and Arabic. And they all go back to the Sanskrit word chaturanga, and I'm sure I don't pronounce it correctly, but it literally means the four angas, or the four members of an army, elephants, horses, chariots, and foot soldiers. So you can see how that relates to the play or to the game chess. Now, checkmate itself occurs a little later in the 15th century in the context of a description of a game of chess. And it has got nothing to do with the king being a mate to the queen or something like that. It's an anglicized version of the Persian shahmat, meaning the king is dead, which was borrowed into Arabic and from there then into other languages and also into English. And you also talked about the pronunciation of the word. Now, in Middle English, the pronunciation would have been different. It would have been closer to check or shahmat. The long A vowel then turned into the diphthong A in the course of the great vowel shift in English. So that is also something we have to take into consideration.
Could you give us examples of other words that have undergone pronunciation changes in English?
Oh yeah, I'm happy to. Quite a dramatic sound change happened in Middle English. It's known as the great vowel shift, and it affects all of the long vowels in English. The long vowels became diphthongs. So what that means is a long E sound would become I. So weasel would become wise. A long A sound would become A, so kake would become cake. And a long O sound would become O, so board would become boat. And it's important to point out that this only affected the long vowels, so the short E sound remained. So we don't say wisdom, we still say wisdom. It really only affected the long vowels.
Professor Varner, today people perceive word change differently. For example, the difference between uninterested and disinterested. Some people think it's a marker of being educated that you know how to keep them apart, while others may think that this is not a relevant issue at all, for at some point in time they might mean more than same thing. Could you shed some light on this issue for us regarding how people today respond to language change?
Oh yeah. Most people think of language change as something that happened a long time ago and something that happened naturally and therefore as something that's really good. But not many people insist that English should go back to being old English and should introduce gender again and should introduce the system of intricate case marking that old English was known for. However, many people don't realize that language change is not something that happens naturally or magically. It's caused by variation in language and it's caused by language contact. So there is still a lot of variation in the English language, probably more variation than ever, given that it is spoken all over the world, and the language is bound to change. Now, while many people accept this in principle, they don't like it when words and rules that they are aware of are affected. So, for example, hardly anyone complains that our use of nice, the adjective nice, is incorrect if you think that in Middle English the word meant something like silly, foolish, or ignorant. So that's a language change that happened a long time ago. People aren't aware of it, so they are happy to use the word nice in the meaning that we attach to it today. The case of uninterested and disinterested is interesting because people feel that if you use them synonymously, then you are using disinterested in a sloppy way. Uninterested should mean not interested, and disinterested should mean something like unbiased by personal interest. And it's considered to be a marker of the educated speaker that he or she would not use disinterested as uninterested. So it's in the same way as the word uninterested. So if someone says he's so disinterested in everything, many people would frown on that. Now, interestingly, if we go back in time, we'll see that the meaning uninterested for disinterested is actually documented earlier than the meaning unbiased or impartial. It was even used by the poet John Donne. So who's right? Can we say disinterested, meaning uninterested, because John Donne did? No, we can say disinterested because today that's what people say. Apparently the word still has both meanings, the meaning not interested and the meaning impartial. And that's why you find both of these meanings recorded in a dictionary. A dictionary's task is to record the meaning of the actual use of language. And if speakers use disinterested in two different ways, so be it. You have to record it. Language changes all the time, and just because a word meant one thing at one point in time, it doesn't mean that this meaning has to be fixed. In the case of nice, most people aren't even aware of the change that the word underwent. It's just a matter of how far back we look.
Thank you, Professor Vonner, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So from this we can see English is a very flexible language. Words undergo extension, narrowing, borrowing, folk etymology, and even pronunciation changes. And these are just some of the ways English vocabulary grows. From Craig Allen and I, Cheng Wen Huang, we thank you for listening to this iPod production.